Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, February 23rd, 2018. And with me today, I have Andrew Orr. How are you, Andrew?
Hey, I'm doing good today.
Awesome. So glad you're here. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I was almost a lot happier because there was a long pause before you said February.
Well, that's because I ran out of breath, actually, which is really weird. When I do the introduction, it's the same here as it is on Apple Context Machine. I take a breath and I actually go through the entire introduction on a single breath. And when I don't, that's a rare thing. So when I had to stop and take a breath, the whole time I'm inhaling, I'm thinking, John's waiting for it. He thinks I'm going to get the date wrong. He thinks I'm going to do it. So sorry I let you down. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Jamf Now, and that's pretty awesome. So we'll talk about Jamf Now and how they're going to make your life easier and help reduce your technology headaches soon. But what we need to do first is talk some about smart speakers. And so this discussion involves more than just HomePod, although HomePod is part of it. There's a new study or survey that Loop Venture published today, where they talk about smart speaker ownership and how people are using their smart speakers. So to me, there's two very interesting points in this survey that they did. And the first is that HomePod already has a 3% market share. Amazon Echo has a 55% market share. This does not surprise me at all. But HomePod, with only a couple weeks, already having a 3% market share, that's actually kind of surprising.
That's a problem. I'm doing the math in my head. How many people were in the survey?
That's actually a really good question. There were 520 people in the survey, and 31% of those people said that they own a smart speaker.
Yeah, but if 3% said they own a HomePod, 3% of 900 is, 27 people? That would margin of error.
Of 900?
3% of...
They had 520 people.
3% of 520. So that's 15 people.
Mm-hmm.
So if that were off by one, you would have a dramatic jump in the percentage. So it seems to me like the survey number of people wasn't big enough to nail down accurately 3% plus or minus, you know, a tenth of a percent. It's more like 3% plus or minus 3%.
Sure. However, the thing that I'm finding interesting out of this, knowing full well that it's not a very large survey base, the fact that HomePod shows up with any percentage after only 2 weeks is interesting.
Yeah, I had estimated that there would be 100,000 or so, or 200,000 sold off at the beginning, and that seems to kind of mesh with Loop Venture's numbers.
So, all right, well, it's nice that they're giving you some validation. Now, here's the...
Yeah, that's the key. It's the key. When you do these kind of estimates, mm-hmm. you always have to do it in two different ways and have two different independent methodologies. I did that years ago when I was trying to figure out how many Apple TVs Apple sold, mm-hmm. and I approached it from two entirely different methods. And they were within, 50% of each other. So if you do it one way and it's twice the value of the other way, you have to kind of question your methodologies. Because if you only use one method, how do you test it? What do you measure it against? So I got to talk to Gene about that and see how he does it.
I'm looking forward to that discussion. Yeah. Okay, so here's the other interesting thing that came out of this survey. And this part, even though it's a relatively small number of people that were included, this really seems to fit with what I'm seeing as well. And it's how people are using their smart speakers. And what basically what this breaks down to is people want to get their streaming music. They want to get their weather. And then they have just very simple general questions that, that they sometimes ask. So what they're, what people are doing with their smart speakers today isn't anything more than HomePod is capable of doing with Siri.
And
I found that very interesting, especially in light of all of the media, bloggers, tech pundits that have been flipping out over Siri's limited capabilities on HomePod. And that, I mean, they want HomePod today to be the voice computer interface from Star Trek. And it's not that. And if this study is accurate, it doesn't need to be that, at least not yet. Not on any device, because that's not how people are using smart speakers.
I think what happens is that a reviewer will get one and they'll spend a week with it and they'll do everything possible with it to test it and try to make it do things it can't do and maybe get annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Home consumer takes it out of the box. They set it up. They plug it in, check if it works. The light's on. They say, hey, what's the weather outside? Yeah, you know, it's 40 degrees. Good. And then they grow with it and they learn its capabilities over time. And they're not spending 8 hours a day because they got to go to work. They got to drop the kids off at school. They got things to do. So they can't sit and work with it as intensively. And so what happens is that the design points for the product match the customer's initial capabilities and interests pretty well.
And I'm betting that the vast majority of smart home speaker owners don't really venture beyond the very basic things that they figure out initially, which is they learn how to stream music, they learn how to check the weather, they learn how to set alarms or timers, and then occasionally they'll ask some random question, and maybe they'll get an appropriate response or not. But I'm betting that's how the vast majority of people use their smart speakers.
And they learn as they go, they get into habits. Maybe even some are afraid they'll break it if they get too aggressive.
I can see people
give it a mental breakdown. You know,
sure. Yeah. So, Andrew, you've been kind of quiet, but I believe that's because I haven't been able to stop talking today.
Me neither. Sorry.
And I'm curious. In your experience, you know, with people you interact with that have smart speakers, does this sound like the sort of thing you're seeing?
Oh, yeah. That's totally in line. Your average person isn't going to be exhaustively testing their device. You know, they're just going to do it like you, or use it like you said, music, basic questions, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thinking the percentage of people that are using their smart speakers as a voice interface for smart home control is a pretty small subset right now. I think that'll change over time, but the people like me that really do a lot of smart home control through an Echo or now a HomePod, we're in the minority.
Well, you know, it just occurred to me there might be some critical piece of infrastructure going on here to do that. Right now, you've got to do a lot of wiring in a figurative sense. You've got to put pieces into place. You got to have a home hub, and you got to set things up. And you got to fiddle with apps, and you got to put everything into place.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the breakthrough will come when there's some sort of better infrastructure in place.
Well,
It just happens. Yeah, I mean, I think the reason I say that is because I'm thinking about like the home family server backup system. You know, it's something I've been fantasizing about for a long time. Right now, you have to connect a time machine. You have to turn it on. You have to have a time machine for each computer direct connector. You have a network. If you go beyond that and you get into a NAS and start getting some bits of, you know, more complicated technology. But if there were just a one simple, all-inclusive, you know, capable family backup server, then you just fire up your computer, click a button, and it's on the net and backs up. So maybe we need some more infrastructure.
Yeah, we do. And I think Amazon is getting that. And that's why they came out with the Echo Plus, which has that, which is the Zigbee Z-Wave compatible hub built in.
Mm.
So then you just buy devices that Amazon says, hey, this works with Echo.
And
now most of that figurative wiring you have to do doesn't happen.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. I have a feeling we'll be coming back to this topic before too long. But what we have to do right now is talk about our sponsor, because I'm pretty excited that Jamf is our sponsor this week. So Jamf now is a great web interface service that you can use to keep track of your macOS and iOS devices. And so it's things like, what are your device serial numbers? What operating system versions are they running? What apps do you have installed? What apps do you want to limit what apps can be installed? What other settings do you have for your devices? So Jamf now keeps track of all of that so that you don't have to create a whole new system just to do that. And if it's just you, it makes it easier to keep track of the devices you have. But let's say that you have a small business or an extended family where you end up being the de facto IT person. Well, with Jamf now, you don't need to have some degree or expensive software to manage all of these devices. You just need Jamf now. So it costs nothing to get started. Like literally nothing money-wise, just a little bit of time. Their system will let you manage up to 3 devices for free forever. No feature limitations. The whole thing just works. And it's so easy to get everything set up. And if you need to add in additional devices, then it's only $2 a month per device. So it's a very economical way to grow a mobile device management system and a laptop and desktop computer management system. And like I said, it's so easy to use, even for the people that you're supporting. All they have to do is click or tap a link that you send them, and then they have to do a little authentication thing, you know, put in their password so that the special certificate can end up on their device, and then you're set. And so it's great because as the administrator, if someone's device gets lost, you can brick it remotely. So you can wipe the data and lock it down so that any data that's there can't be stolen by anyone else. And say someone has setting changes that need to happen, an email server setting is changed, or they went in and changed their settings thinking they were helping and now you have to fix it, you can push those settings back out. It's just so handy and wonderful. So here's what you need to do. Head over to their website, jamf.com, and that's JAMF.com/TDO. And you want to use that link so that the people at Jamf know that you heard about them here on Daily Observations. They totally love having that kind of information. So they know what show you're a fan of and where you were listening when you found out about their great product. So that's jamf.com/TDO so that you can try out Jamf now. And thank you to Jamf for being our sponsor. Okay. So, the other thing that we need to dive into today is inspired by you, John, because you wrote a piece yesterday where you talked about how the personal robots are going to start becoming a bigger thing. And I'm totally with you because we're at the point right now where it feels like companies have been pushing their robotics efforts to a a level where, even though it's still rudimentary, we can interact with robotic devices on what feels like a more human level. So more than me telling my Amazon Echo to make my D-Bot robot vacuum clean the living room. Now it's more like we can actually start interacting with these robotic devices in a more personal way. Does that sound right?
Yeah, it all started yesterday when I had a background mode interview with Chris Matthews, VP of Marketing for Mayfield Robotics. They make curry. It's pronounced mm-hmm. curry as in curry powder.
Mm-hmm.
And we started chatting about family service robots. And along the way, I started realizing that family service robots have been focusing, in my mind anyway, and maybe literature, on tasks. You know, doing things like vacuuming, like iRobot.
Mm-hmm.
Or moving things around, or conducting, or taking the laundry upstairs, or something like that. But these robots have to be, you know, physically complicated. They're possibly physically imposing. They have arms. They're big and heavy and complicated. And any robot that has legs and has to balance and has arms is physically imposing, especially when there's pets and children in the house. And so right away, during the interview with Chris, I started thinking about the difference between family service robots and family companion robots.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this is a literature thing or not. I'm going to start doing some research and ask Chris about it. But it seems a sensible way to go, to start off with smaller, more friendly, less physically imposing, mechanically simpler companion robots. And the thing about Curie is it does all these little things to kind of connect with you. And while it doesn't verbalize, it makes little noises. Mm-hmm. It's sort of an R2-D2. It'll gurgle. It'll meow at your cat. It'll do things like before it turns, it'll turn its head and look to make it look like it's looking to see if the path is clear.
Mm-hmm.
Little things that endear you to it and make it seem like a child and things like that. So you can work with Curie on a more personal, physical level, as opposed to an emotional level, as opposed to, you know, actually performing physical tasks. And those kinds of robots, because they're so complicated mechanically, are also very expensive. So mm-hmm. Curie comes out of the box at $899, something, you know, like the cost of a MacBook Air. It's something that's approachable.
Mm-hmm.
The other thesis that I arrived at when I was talking to Chris was, you know, these little family companion robots eventually will, not Curie right now, but maybe others and later for Curie, will have the ability to chat with you. So a kid can sit down and say, you know, tell me a bedtime story, or describe to me what the weather would be like next week, or things like that. And these are all the things
for...
Yeah,
and these are all the cooking.
These are all the cute. These are all the things that a current intelligent speaker does, but they're not very mobile, and they're not very expressive, and they don't have a humanoid kind of shape as an android. So mm-hmm. my thesis now is little family companion robots will subsume all the capabilities of smart speakers. They'll be able to give you all the information and do all the things that the smart speakers used to do. Pretty soon your smart speaker will be in the back of the closet in a box, and your little robots will be running around the house playing with the kids and telling you about recipes, doing all the things they're supposed to do.
You know, mm-hmm. I got to interact with a Curie at CES. And
I'm so jealous.
It was really cool. Your jealousy mm-hmm. is totally understandable, because it was really neat. I have a video where they were demoing Curie to me. So I'll make sure there's a link to that in the show notes, along with John's piece from yesterday. But the thing was, everything you're describing, except for voice feedback, is already there in the Curie. So mm-hmm. it can be your streaming music device and follow you mm-hmm. around. It can handle all of these voice tasks that are being handled by a smart speaker today.
Yep.
And just be there with you, so you don't have to think about, well, wait, which room am I in, and which device is in here, so I know whether or not I can do voice commands. It's just there.
What do you think, Andrew? Am I on the right track?
What I'm wondering about is if these companion robots will be marketed for everyone, or maybe, for example, they might be marketed more towards elderly people who might need more help around the house.
Yes. In the interview with Chris, we talked about the movie Robot and Frank, where a retired jewel thief presses his family robot into service to assist him with jewel thefts.
Oh, wow.
So in his retirement, he found something interesting to do with his family robot. So it's spot on there, Andrew.
Okay.
people who are not able to move around very well because they're recovering from an injury or a sickness. Mm-hmm. They have a little companion. Maybe it won't be able to fetch them hot tea, but it might be able to, read to them or play music or something like that. So, I think there's a market for a product like that.
Yeah, and the companionship part of a robot like Curry, it to me is very fascinating. Especially since this is clearly one of the things that Manfield Robotics was thinking through, because they put touch sensors on the top of the head for the robot. So if you touch the top of the robot's head, if you pet it, it reacts with pleasure. And yes, I know it's not literal pleasure, but that's the experience that you perceive with the way it reacts.
And Curry will sneeze once in a while, which it doesn't need to do, of course, but makes it more endearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. John, I really like this new idea that you have, that these companion robots are going to ultimately replace the smart speakers in our homes. And, I'm kind of thinking that's going to happen. And that means that at some point, I guess I'm going to have a bunch of speakers that do go into a box, because I'll have my little robot following me around through my house everywhere.
Same here.
Yeah. Hey, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. John, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, it was fun. Thanks for having me.
It was great to have you here. Andrew, I'm so glad you're here as well. So thank you for making the time to be on the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here too.
And thank you to Jamf Now for being our sponsor this week. Head over to their website, jamf.com, jamf.com/TDO. Sign up for your free account to manage your macOS and iOS devices. And don't forget, that's 3 devices for free. That's just how it works. And then $2 per month per device for anything on top of those first 3. jamfnow.com/TDO. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see you again next week.